Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot delta H. Your gunner goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country in Shingle Springs, California, this is your host, John Almada. Good evening, everybody. It's yet another Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio edition, and this is your host, John Almada. And we're broadcasting out of the alternate studio, and quite warm here in the midst of a cold Sierra evening. And the studio was so cold when I got home, I decided to switch to the cell phone and the good old laptop, the old standby, and do the show that way. Tonight, hey, we're going to be having Rick Hayes from LifeSgift.com, and interesting gentleman. He's a evidently he's got quite a few abilities. I'm just going to go ahead and read his the introductory bio. It says here, since 2003, Rick has brought inspiration and life-changing insight to thousands through personal consultations, media appearances, and speaking engagements. But tonight, paranormal and life consultant Rick Hayes will share with you the gifts of life daily and the life thereafter. And so he knows quite a bit about the afterlife. As founder and creator of Life's Gift, Rick has maintained his apparent abilities privately until early 2002. Raised in a Christian environment, Rick struggled to find answers for his abilities through faith and prayer, and in 2002, a dear friend consulted with Rick in regards to a loved one who was soon moving on due to a cancerous disease, and with Rick's assistance, the pain of losing a loved one turned to comfort and knowing that life is everlasting. And the words that changed Rick's life path were, quote, "You are truly being selfish by not sharing your gifts with others." So we're going to learn more about this gentleman, and at the 8:30 hour, I'm going to switch to the chat room, see if anybody has dropped in. And we have guest 4185. So hello, guest 4185. Good to have you aboard. And to our other listeners who are not lurking in, how are you doing? Good to have you with us here on this Friday night. Once again, just so everybody knows, we're going to be switching back in February, which is not that far away. We're going to be switching in February to back to Sunday evenings. At 8 o'clock, we tried a little experiment to see how things would work on Friday nights, and it's just not working out. We love to do shows on Friday night, except for the fact that it's awfully hard to come home from work and then try to set the studio up and have everything warmed up and ready, as you heard tonight. We did have a hunt for the Ghost Rider investigations set up in Coloma for tomorrow morning. Unfortunately, there is a winter storm warning coming in for the Sierra. There's going to be roughly snow down to roughly 500 feet, and we're at 1,300. So I'm going to be having the chainsaws out and getting the property ready. We could very well be snowed in here. So I'm going to be spending tomorrow dealing with that, and I think our ghost will be here on the property, is on the haunted ranch, will be watching over me too. We've actually had a sighting here just recently. 3 days ago, I went to turn out of the den. I was talking to my father and looked and saw a six-foot-tall man walk right through the hallway and turn and go into the living room, and I ran out to look and he was gone, and we think it's my Uncle Mike who is making his appearance. He died in 2003, and so every so often they pop in and just let us know they're around, and I think that's what that was all about. So and we have USA is not gay. That's good. Guest 4209, good to see you. And of course we have guest 4185, thank you. And so we're going to go ahead and go on to talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening in the paranormal world. We always have the news. And number one, let's talk about some of the ghosted, I'm not sure, let's just switch over to this story. This looks a little better. The Paranormal Pets over show that's on, it's called The Haunted on Animal Planet, and we watched that last week and we're very impressed with it. Very well done series. And they're saying it's a 10-part series that presents true stories of paranormal pet experiences. And the show's tagline is, "If animals believe, should you?" And some of the show's segments feature pet owners who believe that their deceased pets have come back to haunt them. And other segments interview people who believe that their living pets have experienced brushes with dead people or demons, and in these segments, the pet owners serve as witnesses to the ghostly phenomena on behalf of their pets. And the first show that we saw last week dealt with that, and I think, as a matter of fact, looking over at my TiVo, the record light is on, so I believe that's taping right now, so we'll see what the second episode has to say here. But overall, very well done. They had the show there was about a particular haunted restaurant that a lot of people would basically said over the years was extremely haunted. The couple who bought the home had dogs and a pet dog, and another any visiting dogs would have the same experience as this little smaller dog, and there was just a lot of fear in these pets. They would back up, they would howl, they would almost scream in being in this place. And evidently there was a gangster that was murdered near the basement, and I guess they caught an EVP, a particular paranormal group caught an EVP saying that this particular guy got whacked, in his own words. And so they had the history and had done all the research and shown that, yes, indeed, that's exactly what had happened in that particular area. And I'm just making sure we have a little bit of power here for the laptop. Don't want that. There we go. So that is basically, you know, what's going on with that show. Now, if you want to learn more about that, definitely hit Travel Channel. There's a great article here on the TucsonCitizen.com about this paranormal pet story. So definitely give that a look. I'm pretty impressed with the show, and I think it's going to be something great. We have cats. And they had I was kind of worried that they weren't going to talk about cats, and evidently they read my mind, because right after I did that in last week's show, they went ahead and talked about cats. And so very, very interesting. As a matter of fact, I just realized that's on Sundays, so it's not going to be right now it's recording. It's on Sundays, I believe. And so I'll be recording that, and we'll talk about it in the following show. Okay, let's take a look at... really good episode of Ghost Hunters. They went to the Mark Twain house and ran into some female ghosts there. Definitely, I think one of their better cases. It was not one of those ones where, quote, a lot happened per se that they got in the way of video evidence. But there was a lot of personal experiences and things that were caught by the cameramen that follow those folks around, namely the footsteps and things that were going on. I thought it was a pretty good episode. It wasn't, and they've taken quite a, I think, middle-of-the-road approach again, and are not so ready to just jump on the bandwagon and say that place is haunted automatically, but it was pretty clear there was a lot going on there, and I would like to sure visit the place. I'm a fan of Mark Twain anyway, but evidently his daughter died in her 20s of some sort of horrible disease, and she ended up, I guess, just never quite leaving. And there's a woman in white who is seen wandering the house. So that is a pretty good one. And we really definitely, if I ever get back east, I'm going to go check that out. But evidently, the woman was age 24. Her name was Susie Clemens, Mark Twain's daughter, died in the home. And let's see, and it was an honor to visit a place so close to home and with so much history, investigator Jason Taws told the Courant, which is the newspaper I'm reading here. Investigator Chris Williams described the historic house as one creepy little place, and the house itself is really quiet, and then you hear those sounds that echo all through the place, Haas told the newspaper. Perry told Cruz the place even smells like a haunted house. Which, yeah, I heard that in that episode. I don't know what a haunted house smells like. I've been in so many, and they're all so different. But I guess it's just the atmosphere. Let's take a look. Check. Oh, and Kathy is with us. Hello, Kathy. Good to see you. She's a sweetheart and always comes in here and runs the chat room for me. So, honey, it's good to have you here. And, yeah, I don't know if you heard, we're getting ready for one heck of a snowstorm out here in California. We're at the base of the Sierra Nevadas, so we're going to be really hip deep in it, I think. And so I'm going to be out with the chainsaw and checking things out and having the generators ready and all that. So who knows? Maybe the ghosts will revel in this with me. Let's see. Let's look at Ghosts of Mark Twain House. We got that one. We got two of the ghost those. Here's one, local ghost hunters featured on Travel Channel website, and this was a group with that was affiliated with the Ghost Adventures crew, just as we are. GRI is a member team for Ghost Adventures crew, and we have yet to meet the boys, but I've been hunted some of the same turf they've done and run into a lot of the same spirits. So one of these days we'll hook up and actually get to meet them, and who knows, I might even get the guys here on the show, and we'll have one kick-ass time. So it says here, though, this is out in Kentucky, and the paper here is the News Enterprise serving Hardin County, Kentucky. Local ghost hunters featured on Travel Channel website. And it says here, the reach of a local paranormal activity search team, Paranormal Activity Search Team of Kentucky, is a little broader after it recently became a Ghost Adventures crew spotlight team on the Travel Channel's website. And, quote, this is huge for our group, said Julie Howard, who co-founded PAST with her husband, Stan, and not only does it get us more widely recognized for our paranormal studies and investigations, but it also gives us greater credibility to be featured on the Travel Channel site with Ghost Adventures. PAST formed in 2006, and they concentrate their search efforts mostly in Kentucky and Indiana. They've got about 20 members. That's a pretty good-sized team, ranging in age from 20 to 70 years old. Hey, you give more power to those guys. We want to see more middle-aged people out there, honey. Come on. And, quote, we consider ourselves a professional team, but everybody does have day jobs as well. Yeah. I got to pay the bills and buy the equipment for my team. I know that. Howard said, due to jobs and families, we totally understand if someone can't participate all the time. And boy, is that the truth. You know, managing a paranormal team, my own experience, it's like herding cats and trying to collect the evidence and all that stuff. I'll pass one secret along to everybody who does hunts out there. If you do hunt with a team, definitely take a evidence computer along so that everybody can put their evidence all at one time onto the computer right then. Because if you don't, you're never going to get it all. Trust me, I've been there, done that, and I'm currently in the midst of finishing up all our evidence reviews for 2009, and we've got some outstanding cases to go back and do reveals on. Specifically, I'll talk a little bit about some of our stuff. We've got the one of the cases, we're calling it the 73rd Street case, in a private home, and basically that was a hunt where we had inexplicable phenomena in the house, people feeling watched, strange things happening in one particular bedroom. You would walk in and feel immediately like you were being watched, and if you looked in the mirror, you would actually see people in the mirror that were not there with you, and yet you did see them. Strange writings in a particular garage that were, when we got there and took a look at it, it was unreal. Basically the writings of a madman. And the way the garage was laid out, all the windows were boarded over and screwed down with very thick plywood, almost like it was a prison in, you know, in some ways. So extremely disturbing. Our psychic, Renee Martin, who's since then has moved down to L.A., but she's still with GRI. She was pretty blown away by this, and I was looking at it with a jaundiced eye going, this is not normal. We did get some great EVPs. I got a few to play on the show. I don't know. I might even try to play them now here. I don't know if everybody's up for that. And we've got people talking about AIDS. Okay, my brother's cousin had AIDS and died in his grandpa's house. Everybody who stayed there since gets AIDS. Oh, my God. Well, I don't know what to make of that. I'm not going to even go there. Well, I hope that people don't stay there then. Let's just say that. Let's see. I'm going to get to the switchboard where we can play some of this EVP evidence. Here we go. And we're at 15 past the hour. And if I can find one of these EVPs, here we go. These tend to sound different when we play them here on Blog Talk, but I'm going to see, try them at 70%, and then we'll just take it forward. So this one, basically, I think it was in the garage that we picked this up, and we think it says did not complete or something to that effect. So I'm going to go ahead and play that.
Are you afraid of being judged? Is that why you don't move on? Yes.
Oh, okay. That's why I named it did not complete. What that really was saying was yes. I'll play that a little bit louder. And let's see. And here we go.
Are you afraid of being judged? Is that why you don't move on? Yes.
That? We were getting an awful lot of that, and what was strange is we were getting some fairly hostile EVPs in there, and then we were getting some definite indications that there was a woman hanging around and a nicer man, but one hostile gentleman. And what was strange was in that case we had a later on we had all gone out of the garage and then decided to come back to consult as a group. We were meeting there as the command central point. And we met and then we just had stepped back inside when suddenly the owner of the home opened the door and this very large pit bull, female pit bull dog, came running absolutely terrified from the backyard and actually crashed through the screen trying to get away from something that wasn't there. So we were, then we went outside and we were looking around trying to understand what in the heck that could have been, but the dog absolutely destroyed this entire back, you know, screen door trying to get away from something. And our theory is that we actually ran this more hostile spirit out and it was in the backyard with the dog. The home had a whole lot of strange electrical problems. We had a room where one of our K2 meters actually just went absolutely crazy. One of our members is a man by the name of Spencer Hughes, and he's the host of Fox Across America, and he's really into it. Hi, Karen. Good to see you. And Mystic Taint, good to see you, too. But yeah, we basically Spencer put the K2 out on this bed in this front room, and the K2 went absolutely crazy. So and we watched it. It was that way for many minutes, and we moved it around. You know, I thought for sure we had some sort of strange, you know, just interaction with house power or something like that, but it turned out that's not the case. So definitely an interesting case. I'm going to play one more EVP. I think we got a couple here. We have, I'll take that over here. Now, I think this is fairly clear. I'll play it 70%.
Yeah.
And that wasn't too loud. I'm going to take it up to 150 because you definitely heard the kind of the sound of whispering. But in headphones, it says something over here. So here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely that voice. And all through, what was interesting on this is usually you don't get a lot of EVPs when you're out on a case. And it's often you don't get the kind of evidence where you'll have almost whole conversations going on. And in this particular case, we were having literally, you know, probably every other sentence us talking, we were getting EVPs. So we're having quite a time catching up with the evidence pile on this because there's just so many. It's going to be really tough to go to the homeowner later on and explain all this. But bottom line is there's just a huge amount of EVP in this particular you know, instance at this home. So we're going to be dealing with that, and we're also plowing through the Truckee evidence. We visited in November the Truckee Hotel. As a matter of fact, if you go out on foxnewsradio.com, Spencer wrote a couple of very good case reports about our experiences out there, and there were just some really significant EVPs obtained, including just some very hostile stuff down in the lower floor. Within 10 seconds of me starting the recorder, there was basically a racially charged EVP that was picked up with just a pretty good loud one, but it's not something I would play on air, but it was extremely extremely offensive if you know, depending on who you are. And there was just case after case where we were having K2 activity. I got a room in the second floor. Now, the second, third, and fourth floors are in that hotel are all full of activity. And believe me, if you live in Nevada or out in California, Northern California, definitely check out the Truckee Hotel if you want to spend the night in a place that's got some activity going on. But we were in, I think I was in room 218, and we were getting EVPs of a man saying that heaven... Basically, it was to the effect of, heaven help me, Frank, help me hide her, I've killed her. And then all through the rest of the investigation, actually, I don't have that Mystic Taint, I don't have that offensive one on right now. We'll load it up on the website, and I'll let you just get a link for that later. I'll bring it up next week, so if you come back again next Friday, we'll put that up. It's not something I would play on air. So I'll put it up on the website and then have a folder for it and let folks that want to hear that hear it. Let's just be sufficient to say that at that particular establishment, there was a lot of negative stuff happened. A lot of murders in that hotel. You know, the second floor where I talked about the killing of that man talking about killing someone. All through that part of the hotel and even outside, we were picking up heaven help me. And what we think is happening in part of the hotel is that we have a lot of residual activity going on. So that seems to be, powering quite a bit of activity through there, just the sheer passions that went on. There was a woman killed in room 215 by a shotgun blast, and we did – Renee Martine was with us on that case too in early November, and we did pick up during a very short burst recording session a response from this woman, along with one visual phenomena. It looked like we were getting orb activity. So I'm still collecting all that evidence up from everybody, and December is going to be the month that we get it all together, and then we'll be able to do some interesting shows basically about these just more recent cases. What was really fascinating was on the fourth floor where we stayed, we actually heard a little girl in the hall. Mystic Taint says maybe there was a KKK member. Actually, Mystic Taint, this was a I'll just say basically what it was. This was directed at Chinese people, and basically throughout here in this part of the world, even on the property where I live, we had a lot of Chinese who did a lot of the gold mining and tunneling activities, that kind of thing. And there were people who had a lot of problems with that. A lot of the white folks out here really had it in for the Chinese and would do all sorts of things like kill them, said all kinds of terrible things. Now, not far from the Truckee Hotel, there was a place where there was actually, I think, quite a large slaughter of Chinese folks that was done out there. And so I'm not terribly surprised that I did pick that up. And it was just a very unfortunate thing, but something on the order of 3,000 Chinese were killed near Truckee. And it's a great tragedy that's not, well, I think, very well talked about. But I'm not surprised at all that I would pick that up. So the unfortunate thing is this was a woman's voice that we picked up saying this. So she was extremely prejudiced against Chinese. But anyway, up on the fourth floor, we had quite the experience with someone basically said into my ear in room 401, go home, get out. And I heard it, and I had my recorder running, and I said to my cousin who was across from me, I said, did you hear that? And then it said, get out. And I heard that, and I said, did you hear that? And lo and behold, we caught the entire exchange on tape, including the ghost, basically, that was speaking to me. So we're going to go ahead and load that up for next week and play that. And I'll try to get Spencer Hughes on and have him with us here on the show and during the first half hour, and we can talk about some of these more extraordinary pieces of evidence we've got. But we're coming up on the half hour. And I'm going to go ahead and take a look at the switchboard and see if we have our caller coming in. He's not in quite yet. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put a little music on for just a little bit, not a long time. And we'll go ahead and take a brief break and be watching for our caller. And this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
For a Scooby snack?
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Would you do it for a Scooby snack?
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do?
Are there any spiritual entities who wish to speak with us here at the bookstore? If so, please go ahead and
name is Reese Saloon. Name is Reese Saloon.
Give you no break. is Spooksville.
GRI is filmed on location by the men and women of Ghost Rider Investigations. All cases are suspect until proven genuine through scientific analysis and testing.
That was a fun mix to do that. Anyway, hey, we've got Rick. He is dialed in, and I'm going to go ahead and do the bio and then answer the phone, and I'm sure he's listening in on the line right now. So we're going to do the short bio, as we have it in our show notes here. And since 2003, Rick has brought inspiration and life-changing insight to thousands through personal consultations, media appearances, and speaking engagements. But tonight he'll share with you the gifts of life daily and the life thereafter, as we mentioned a little earlier in the show. Now, we talked a little bit about that Rick was told by a good friend that he was being selfish for not sharing his gifts with others. And with continued prayer and guidance, Rick made the decision to go public. And since the launching of Life's Gift in 2003, he's assisted many in consultation with regard to life and life everlasting. Rick was born in a small community in the Midwest and attended college in Florida. Spends his free time sharing quality moments with his family, and he says, quote, "I truly feel that our Creator gave each of us a unique spirit and the blessing of an earthly plan, and life is a gift." And I do agree with that. I think that we all have something that we're meant to do. And so we are going to go ahead and answer the line and say hello to Rick. And hello, Rick, are you with us?
Well, absolutely. It's great to be with you this evening. How's everyone?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, pretty good. We're got a nice little chat room going here for a Friday night. Got Kathy. You got guest 4242-4417. My good buddy Karen out in Arizona, Mystic Taint, and someone that called USA is not gay. So that's the chat room, my friend. But,
well,
it's
a pleasure to be with you tonight. I'm just a little bit on the jet lag this evening. I literally just a few hours ago flew in from Tampa, and I'm now in Nashville, Tennessee, And you talk about going from 82 degrees to 27 degrees in just a few hours. You really have to adjust, you know.
I did that once. I came back from a cruise in the Caribbean in November, more years ago than I can't care to remember. But I forgot about what it would be like, and we transitioned planes in St. Louis, and it was 20 below, and I was in shorts.
Wow! This is one of those times I'd like to be in my body of spirit at the time, because the weather does not affect the body of spirit. So, you know, this is one that's like, I'd like to be in my body of spirit right now. I wouldn't see the big difference in the weather.
You know, what's funny is we do EVP research out here. I'm out in Northern California in gold country out here. And I asked that.
Beautiful country.
Oh, yeah. And we asked the spirit, basically, what was it like? Did they get cold during rainstorms and snow? And, no problem. You know, we're cool with that. And I'm going,
that's right.
That's like really advantageous. I mean, you don't get a heating bill or a cooling bill at all. I guess it's just always perfect temperature. Well, let's start at the beginning. You basically had a life of having, you talk about your abilities. So obviously you grew up with knowing you had something. And I think that's probably just a great place to go. So, you know, in your own words, how did it all begin for you?
Well, actually, and I share this in speaking events, and I share this with everyone of me, you know, the abilities I have. Rick Hayes isn't special. I feel we all have these abilities. We have, when we are created, we're given many gifts. And one of the gifts is to know that our loved ones who have what I call completed our plan here on Earth and simply moved on are still around us. And we have these abilities, but as we're growing up, we in a sense block our abilities by being told that it's imagination, it's a coincidence. Where as the older we get, then we no longer focus on the abilities we were given. So, you know, for myself personally, I share with everyone, you know, I know I've had these all my life. I was one of those 3-4-year-old child that would get out of bed in the middle of the night and sneak into mommy and daddy's bed because, you know, and they would, they're loving parents, but they would pick me up and take me back in my bedroom and say, now go back to sleep. You had a bad dream. And I would say, but that man standing over there in the corner, you know. And so, you know, I've had these all my life, but as you shared in the bio, I actually kept them to myself. I did not share them with anyone other than my family, just for the simple fact that I didn't want everyone to think I was weird or, you know, something was wrong with me. And I wanted to be a regular kid on the block. So I kept it basically to myself until late 2002. And that's when that friend, as you said in the bio, shared with me I was being very selfish for not sharing this with others based on the messages I gave to her. And from that point on, I realized that, you know, she was exactly right. All these years I was being selfish. And so from March, we created Life's Gift in March of 2003. And I tell you, every morning now I wake up and I'm really excited about the day, what the day is going to bring, and being able to share with everyone. I literally, and this is, you know, what I share with everyone today is Rick Hayes literally lives a supernatural life.
That's how I feel about mine. Similar experiences. I've grown up in a family of Scottish Highlanders, and we just sort of took it as a normal thing, you know. But you, I think in your case, you've done something extraordinary. You've taken it as a means to really go help people. And, you know, you really believe in what you're doing. You can see that very easily just having gone through your site and looked around. And you've got a great forum going on out there. So you're reaching out to the, you know, people, and they're reaching it back at you. But what exactly do you do? I mean, how does, you know, your average day go with? What sorts of things do you do in helping people?
Well, I, you know, one of the questions is how do they, what do I title myself? And I really struggled with this, John, because I really couldn't, you know, I didn't want to be called a psychic. I didn't want to be called a medium, even though I had the abilities as being defined as that. And so I went through many titles when I first came out in the public. I was a paranormal communications consultant. I was a life consultant. I was a paranormal life consultant. And now that the more and more I'm in the media, you know, now they're defining me as psychic medium. And I just share with everyone that call me what you want. Just call me to dinner. I'll be happy, you know. So, you know, but you know, I connect with our loved ones who, and you'll never hear me use the word, very, very seldom I will use the word death or dead, just simply because the definition of those two words means an end. And I know with the abilities given to me that we do not end in life. We simply complete our plan here on earth, and we simply move on to a life everlasting. And so I connect with loved ones who are still around us, sharing the messages to their loved ones to let them know and to validate and to acknowledge that their presence is still around. I do that on a personal consultation basis through group events. And one of the things I really enjoy doing, and I've been doing it, had the opportunity for the last several months of really being a lot of doing this, is working with paranormal investigators and going into locations that, and the reason I like doing that is because the only tool I have is what's been given within me, and to be able to share this ability with the technology and the electronics that is now in this industry today is just absolutely phenomenal, and I believe it's opened many, many new doors and allowing people to see that there's more than just life here. And so, you know, there's many areas that this ability has allowed me to now go into, you know, in the sense of writing books and doing CDs and being in film and being on television and also one-on-one personal consultation. So, you know, as I said, it's just the abilities given to me is giving me the ability to share with everyone that the value of life here is so very important because it's going to continue into the life everlasting.
Okay, and you now I'm looking at some of the, you know, some of our the topics here, and I see that you were working on the Sci-Fi Channel, The Possessed. It says,
yeah.
I didn't get a chance to see that. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, that was just an amazing experience, and Chris and Phil Booth are the producers, just phenomenal guys to work with, and they actually approached me on a previous film called Children of the Grave, and I, because of my schedule at the time, I was not able to be a part of it, and you know I usually smack myself on the back of the head for not doing that, but they came to me and asked me if they were doing a documentary documented as one of the first documented cases of possession. And it was in a small town in Waseca, Illinois. And they asked me if I would just meet them in this at a certain location for a film shoot. And there's about two or three stipulations I usually ask when I'm going to be a part of the media or to go to a location. The first is that, especially when it comes to the media, John, I don't want to be scripted. I don't want to be told what to say, how to say it. I personally feel we're getting a lot more, too much of that in the media today in this industry. And if we continue to do so, we're going to be closing doors when we should be opening doors. So the first step is... The first is I don't want to be scripted. I want to be, and the second is I don't want to be told anything about the location we're going to, simply for the fact that I feel that when I get there, that the ones who've had the experiences and memories there will actually be able to share with me more about that location than any brochure or anything you can tell me. So, and they really honored that. And then the third is kind of a humorous side is I usually share with everyone, make sure I got my M&Ms in my green room, so in my dressing room. So, but that's another side of the story on that part. But the film The Possessed it took a little over 2 years to create the film, and it actually premiered on the Sci-Fi Channel on October the 8th, and it was replayed again, I believe just sometime in November, and it's going to be shown again. NBC Universal has the contract to it now, the distribution rights. But the film itself is just phenomenal, and again, it gave me the opportunity to connect with those that was a part of this this documented case, and it's the story of a young girl named Mary Roth, who lived in the 1800s and was quote possessed by some type of spirit. 12 years, she moved on when she was approximately 19 years old. 12 years after she moved on, another young girl, about 13 years old, by the name of Lawrence Venom, in the same town, began to take the presence of Mary Roth, who had moved on 12 years earlier. The whole focus of the film is the story of Mary Roth and Lawrence Venom, but we also go into how at that time what was considered possession, what was considered the people insane, was actually maybe have been medical problems today, or maybe some kind of type of medical situations, and we also went into how people were treated in mental institutions during that time, and what got me more than anything, and again, I didn't know anything about the story. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know the title of the film. And so after the first edit, I got to see a copy of it. And it just floored me how individuals were treated back during that time, which we're talking, late 1800s, how they were treated back in that time in these institutions such as these. And we actually did a part of the film also in an abandoned asylum that is privately owned. It was the Mantino Asylum, and just a great film. I just enjoyed being a part of it.
Wow, you touch on the asylums. My grandfather was director of state mental health building over at a mental hospital out of Auburn, California, called DeWitt. It was called DeWitt. And it's since closed down, and they've actually got government buildings now on this site. And I've often wondered if that particular set of buildings is haunted. given the activities that happened in a lot of these facilities. And, you know, based on the stories just I know from hearing what my family talked about, just in the 19th, you know, or the 20th century, I can only imagine what the 19th was like. So I definitely would like to see this film when it comes out again, just on that basis alone. But what was it like to be in the asylum itself that you were dealing with?
Well, we captured, in this film, you'll see we captured over 108 EVPs during the filming of this film. And also, we not only captured audio, but we also captured video as well. And one example of the video was in was actually filmed at the Mantino Asylum. And we were, as soon as I walked in, I began immediately connecting with the individuals that, you know, were in the location. And my feeling is that they're not trapped there. They're just simply there because they know about the place and they know why we're there. So who better to guide you, or what I call a tour guide in places like this, than the ones who had the experiences and memories there. So as soon as I walked in, I immediately began connecting and I began sharing with them what I was feeling. And I went to this one room, and you'll see it on the film, where I started sharing where the beds were actually laid in rows. And I began to kept hearing this young girl telling me, "Mommy, Mommy." We actually caught that on the EVPs. But there was one part where I was connecting with a young person, and we looked. They had the thermal camera on, and I told them to look down the hallway, and they actually captured the what they would call the shadow of a young child and standing at one end of the hallway. And it was just an unbelievable place. I mean, and a lot of these places we go to, I was in Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago at another place very similar. It has a lot of history and again the same thing. There's a lot of memories there and experiences there, and a lot of individuals who their life was there. So, and their life here on earth may have ended there. So because of that, they know a lot about that place, and they will connect with that. Now, you said something about your grandfather earlier. You said he was a director?
Yeah, my grandfather was a pretty extraordinary man. He was a well-known neurosurgeon.
Would you know if he had like a stamp, or he would stamp something?
I would tend to think he would. He would have done a lot of the psych evaluations and things like that. He did an awful lot of work with criminally insane people. I found reference. I'm doing some of the research on it because a lot of that side of the family I didn't know too much about. And I found old references up here in near Placerville where I'm at. I'm just in a little town called Shingle Springs right outside. And I found in the Mountain Democrat newspaper references to cases that my grandfather actually testified on. So I would think he would be doing a lot of that. And he had four medical doctorates and a law degree. Very intelligent guy, photographic memory. And sometimes we actually feel him around because my father's had a stroke 2 years ago, and I actually kind of asked for him to come out and kind of keep an eye on Dad.
Okay.
And he
showed
up.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But when you said his name, I mean, I immediately, and I'll share with you how this works for me, but I immediately, it's almost like there's something about an embossed stamp, and it may be on a certificate or something, but something about an embossed stamp. And if you don't have this, I think you need to do a little research and maybe find up either a photocopy of it or a copy of it, and he wants you to keep that.
You know, it makes sense to me because there's research I'm doing. I've been trying to find his papers.
Okay.
And all the certificates. Now, I actually found a famous scientific paper that he authored with two other gentlemen, and I was able to get that through a medical library. I actually paid, you know, good money to get that because I wanted to have that to show the rest of the family. And what I'm looking for is actually his medical certifications, his actual, you know, diplomas with those stamps like you're talking about. So
okay.
On my
well,
mind
what
is that?
And I know you got a pen near you right now. So and I also got the number at 19. So there may be a reference to this, or there may be another a 19 on it, or there may be something to do with reference number 19 for you.
Okay, I'm just I'm putting that in the computer right now.
Okay.
Okay, and by the way, thank you. I mean, I'm getting a reading from a very good psychic.
Well, and people ask me how this works, and you know, we're several states away, but it's almost like, especially the way we're doing this right now, it's almost like having three-way calling. And there are several ways they connect with me. One is what I call, what's going on here now. It's what's called a verbal thought. And of course, there are no, your grandfather is no longer in his physical body, or he's no longer in his physical voice. He's now in his spiritual body and spiritual voice. It's almost like he's connecting with us, you know, and sharing this with me. But he's also helping me by what I call picture postcards, and that's what I was doing the embossed emblem. He gives me these pictures, and it's almost like someone taking a picture postcard, putting it in front of your eyes, taking it away. And I got to tell you this too. He's telling, and I'm also to share with you that I don't know if your dad, if he having trouble, and you said a stroke, is he having trouble with one side of his face?
It's funny because he is actually quite a survivor. I mean, we nearly lost him, and then when we got him back home, we went through quite the set of visits with seizures. And I've been to the hospital so many times; we've got a regular routine. But we've got it stabilized, and he has one side that's slightly weaker. But it's odd that you would say that, because my mother brought up again, I was commenting how he always stays away from us when we're in the kitchen, just this morning before I went to work, and my mother said that's because he has noticeably weaker on the right side, and he'll spin to the right and he'll run right into you, so he's afraid of hurting you. And
okay.
So that conversation just happened this morning of all
things. Okay. Well, and maybe just to give you some comfort, and again a validation to you that did you say this is his father?
Yeah, that would be my grandfather.
Okay.
Would be his father.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a validation to you that he's around, and he is definitely taking care of his son. He's watching over his son. But they show me the right face, but they almost want me to give you some comfort and say, it's almost like to tell you to be patient. This will heal and it will improve, okay?
Yeah, we have been, and it's I was actually getting set to move out just before this happened. We're on a 7-acre ranch here, and it's we raise azaleas and rhododendrons, and I have a large garden. And this happened, and I could find. I have ability myself, and I could see that something was coming, and so I stuck around, and whammo, you know, this came down. And I was not surprised, but what we've ended up doing is a complete change of life. And I'm now the domestic engineer and finder of lost things, and just recently electrical engineer. So I'm learning a lot. You know, what's funny is when a stroke happens, it happens to the whole family, not just to the person that it happened to. So we've seen the positive in it, that God has a plan for us, because you know, just because he's had a stroke, you know, and things have shifted around, we've all had to engage different abilities and challenges that we didn't know we could do. And so,
that's a great point, John. I mean, I share when I speak that, you know, and really look at it this way for all your listeners tonight. For every challenge you have in your life, there is a reward, there is a gift, and the challenge is for learning. You're going to learn from it. You're going to grow from it. And there will be a reward, just like in this, your challenge here of your father going through this stroke. You know, it's brought the family closer together, most probably. And if you look at it in the sense of this challenge right now is creating some and growing and learning about the family. And by the way, your grandfather keeps poking me and want me to tell you not to worry, okay? So he's really wanting me to say everything's going to be okay. Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, thank you, because it's oddly enough. I mean, my mother and me talk pretty realistically about things, and you know, we know the realities here, and it's not like we're not ready, you know. And I totally agree with you. I've run into too many dead people that I'm now friends with, you know, that I've struck up friendships with some of these guys, and they know me, and I get them on EVPs, and they say hi to me. So, I mean, I know my father won't be gone when it happens, but at the same time, I'm comforted because I've seen so much now, and you know, it's just been an extraordinary adventure, because when this happened, that's how I got mostly into this, is because the stroke, I've been seeing ghosts my whole life, but this really changed everything, and I began researching it more, and I just ended up with my own team and now a show. And so if none of this had happened, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. So, you know, so God saw fit to change everything, and, you know, and not only that, he is getting better. His speech is getting better. He loves to argue, and he sits around like a spider every night and waits for me to come home so he can argue about ghost hunting. So, yes, thank you very much. Hey, I wanted to ask you, I mean, since you're reading me, I'm sure are some of our listeners out there would probably not mind if you're up to open to that.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so if you want a reading with Rick, the number is 646-478-0377, and I've got the switchboard watching for calls coming in. So while we're waiting for a caller, I saw one question that got me thinking, and I was in the car this morning thinking about it, and it was really quite profound. And it was the second question in our list here, what are ghosts? And I had to actually stop and ask that myself that question, and I really couldn't come up with a great answer right off the bat. So let's hear your definition.
Well, I will share my definition, but first I've just been very pleased here recently because I've noticed, for example, Zach of Ghost Adventures, I think just recently said it on his show that, and he's absolutely right, that we must understand that these ghosts are nothing more than that they were people. He defines it as, they were once people like you and me, you know. And my feeling is has always been that ghosts are nothing more than loved ones who have completed their plan, as I said earlier, and moved on. They're your mother, your father, your grandmother, your grandfather. And if it is not your mother, grandmother, grandfather, it is someone's mother, grandfather, grandmother, brother, sister. And so ghosts are nothing more, and everyone always asks me, they say, aren't you ever afraid to go in these locations? And I have been to almost every location you can think of that has been, quote, haunted. They say, aren't you afraid? And it's like, afraid of someone's mother? Afraid of someone's grandfather? Not really, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, my feeling is simply that ghosts are nothing more than loved ones who have, again, completed their path here on Earth, and it's just simply moved on, still around us, still acknowledging to us that life is everlasting.
I would agree. I've hunted read about 100 cases now, and I've had only a few bad experiences with you know, mostly in the asylums. You come back feeling a little worked up, but most of the time you get the most extraordinary stories that come out when you really research and you find you know, tragedy often, but there's also stories of love coming out from these people, and they're hanging around for various reasons, and like you say, you know, the tour guide thing, and when you show interest in them, they are very excited, and they want to share more. But I wonder, I mean, you basically were talking to them as a tour guide, but where do they go when they're done with the tour?
Well, and that's another, and you know, I share with everyone that, you know, I just follow what I feel, I know everyone's got their own feelings, and I'm the first to tell everyone, you know, Rick Hayes, no one really knows until you get there. And when Rick Hayes completes his plan here and moves on, his creator may say, sit down, Rick, we got a lot to talk about because you were wrong on a lot of things, okay? But you know, my feeling is that there's also some times that we go in these locations that something will happen. For example, you know, something may fall or something appears to be thrown. I was in an abandoned hospital a few months ago, and before we went down, we were getting ready to go down the basement, and the individual that was taking me down there said, we really don't like going down there. And I said, is there a reason? They said, well, just the night before, when we was down there, there was a small pipe thrown at one of our investigators. And so I said, really? And they said, yes. And I said, well, let's go on down there, you know. And so we went down the basement. Immediately I connected with this individual, and I shared. And the first words I heard was, left too soon. And so I looked at him, and I said, you were leaving when this happened. And he said, right. And I said, you were leaving too soon. They had more to tell you. And I said, that piece of pipe was not going to hit her. And he said, well, actually it didn't. It kind of just kind of fell behind her, a few feet behind her on the floor. I said, yeah, there was no harm here. They was just simply trying to get your attention, you know, and that's all they were doing because they had more to share with you. So I feel like there are times when we go into these locations that when these things happen, they're not trying to harm us. They're just trying to say, you're not paying attention to us, so we got to do something in a physical validation to let you know we are here.
And when you talk about the physical validation, you know, it's funny because I've read some theory that has to do with the fact that there's some thought that ghosts can pick up objects up to around 10 pounds in weight. And and I've actually seen that happen. I've actually seen things thrown and thrown with force. So I totally believe what you're saying. I mean, the ability to physically interact and do things to get your attention is, you know, they're doing everything they can sometimes to get that validation. But it, you know, the thing is it's, you know, why they hang around and why they stay around. It's funny because every case I've done, no two have been the same. You know, have you found that to be true in your experience? Why the reasons why they stay? It's just never quite the same, and it's so unique in each case.
Right, and again, I kind of missed that question earlier, and I'm sorry for that. But you know, I've been to these locations, and one of the theories is that these spirits are trapped. And you know, my feeling is this: if they're able to go through walls, if they're able to go through, you know, concrete, if they're able, and we've had validations of an infrared spirit on infrared camera, spirit going through a wall. Well, if they can go through walls, why would they be? How could they be trapped? They could go anywhere they wanted to, you know. So,
yeah.
So my feelings is it's not so much that they're trapped there. Again, I want to go back to this, especially if we go to a location like we've been talking about in this asylum. When you go in there, they know that we're going in there to learn from them. They know that we're going there for the validations that we need to know about the history and the memories here. For example, a very good example that I've been there half a dozen times is the Waverly Sanatorium. And almost every time, you know, every time someone goes in there, there's something that goes on. And there's theories that there are some spirits that are trapped there. I don't feel like they're trapped there. I simply feel like they know why we're coming in, so they're helping us again. They're helping us to understand who better to teach us than those, for example, the Waverly, who had spent maybe 8, 10, 12 years of their life there and maybe their final days there and would know more about that place than anything. So, you know, when we go to these locations, what they're simply doing is, and you're saying, are there different ones at different times? Absolutely. You know, if you go to my house right now, I'm not there, but there's someone there, okay? But next week, if you go to my house, I might be there, but someone else may not be there. So, and it's the same thing at these locations, you know. And again, it's what you're going in for. If you're going into this location to learn maybe, for example, about a certain room, who better to teach you about that room than the one who would know about that room? For example, a doctor maybe who had, this was a doctor's office, or this may have been a patient's off a room or something like that. And I totally agree with you. When you go in, they know why you're coming in, and they're going to help you, and there may be different ones to help you at different times.
Well, there's one of our listeners here is in the chat room on a similar note as asking, a gentleman by the name of USA, and he's basically saying, he's talking about AIDS, and he's talking about my brother's friend's cousin got it when he fell in, and I'm trying to understand what this is saying, but basically he's saying that there's a spirit, I believe, hanging around who had AIDS, and that people who go there tend to get sick. I'm not sure that I'm reading this correct, but basically they tend to get ill having gone there. And is that possible? I mean, is that possible that someone who died of it says here fell in the pool. Okay, so it's a very mixed up read here, but basically I'm just going to paraphrase though. I have felt like when I've gone into some haunts, like I've taken on illness when I've been around where a particular spirit died a certain way. So maybe that's a good way to ask this question. Have you had similar experiences, and is that just something that, is that a form of them teaching you how they got the disease?
Or absolutely.
How they died?
Absolutely so. See, what we must understand is they understand that we're still in our physical body and that we are still mostly utilizing our touch, our feel, our sense of hearing, our sense of smell. Yeah. And so they help us to understand, again, by just helping us by utilizing the senses that we have. I have went into locations just like he was sharing that, you know, with AIDS, someone would walk in, they start feeling ill. There's many a times I have done that. And, you know, I talked about the Waverly Sanatorium earlier. There's a floor in this Waverly that where the most, that was the sickest at that time, had the disease the worst, were all on this floor, which is the fourth floor. Every time I go into the fourth floor, I immediately almost feel very nauseous, and I immediately begin to feel the tuberculosis, the symptoms of the tuberculosis going into me. Now, is it actually becoming, am I actually becoming nauseous? Am I actually getting these symptoms? Absolutely not. They just simply want you to know what they went through, how it felt when they went through this. In personal consultations, there's times that I will, you know, and I will begin to connect with someone that is a family member of theirs, and I would begin sharing with them about maybe I'll have pressure on my chest, or if I'm working on missing cases, or I'm working on cases where, you know, they still need questions to what happened. For example, a couple weeks ago, I was working on one that was considered a suicide back in many years ago, and I immediately began to feel very hot. I felt like I was on fire, and also, like before that, I felt like there was a sharp pain, a penetration into my head. And there's validation that this person was had been set on fire, but before that was shot in the head. So, you know, again, all they're doing is they're helping us to understand by simply utilizing our senses that we still have in our physical body.
Yeah, I had the same thing at Wolf Manor over in Fresno. Not too long after Taps had been there. I was there in November of last year, and I swear to God, Rick, I came out of there. I felt like I'd been through a total workout. It took 3 days for me just to feel okay again. It was like the most sad experience. And when I opened myself up, I was hunting with and Taps. Some Taps members were there. I hunted with Barry Fitzgerald. From Ghost Hunters International was there, and Amy and Britt were there too. And it was a really strange place to be in, because the minute I opened up in the kitchen there, I felt the most sad, lost feeling I've ever had in my life. And I actually picked up on a woman named Elizabeth, and she was murdered after she had gotten pregnant. And she was telling us about her life, and I came out of there just totally shaken up. It took me just to get back into the hunt. It took me a good half hour just to kind of compose myself after that. But you know, it's not too
well.
Much
you
to
mentioned
be,
you
be
mentioned
back, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned the West Coast. I mean, this was years before I, just a few years before I actually came out in the public. But I actually visited Alcatraz in San Francisco. And I walked in there, and I immediately went into one of the cells. When I went into one of the cells, I began feeling what they would call shanked. And I was feeling it in my lower back. And, you know, we asked the guy at that time, and he said, well, there's rumors, there's stories that the person that was in this particular cell, his roommate had actually had stabbed him in the back. And I felt that as I went into that cell. So, you know, again, it's simply that they're wanting us to understand, and they utilize this by using all the senses that we have. And I want to end that. I want to end that part by telling you that the next time I'm out in your area, I would love to go with your group, because it sounds like we'd have a great time.
We're a small team, but we got some really pretty diverse members. I mean, I've got Spencer Hughes from Fox Across America, is a good friend of mine. He lives in the area, and so he hooked up with me back in July and on the USS Hornet, and we've never looked back. And I'm having the time of my life with him. I work in propulsion science. I'm a rocket scientist, and I do computer security systems and things like that, and was corporate webmaster for the company I'm at for quite a few years. So I've got the technical stuff and a little bit of the psychic. You know, Spence is just all around. He's the equipment junkie. He's worse than I am. But he seems to have good sensitivities. I've got another gal, a friend of ours who works for the state. She's Michelle. I'm not sure if she's listening in tonight. She might be a little busy out there, but she's our case researcher and our debunker and skeptic. So yeah, we got a pretty good bunch going on here. And Karen out there in Arizona, she's come up and hunted with us, so she's considered an extended member. And yeah, I think you'd have a good time with us. I'd definitely be more than pleased to have you on a hunt with us, because we do use psychics and mediums quite a bit. And mainly, I mean, in our way of doing it, we basically just turn you loose and just follow you, you know. And you know, that's because it's just like you said, you're going in with no other tools other than what you're sensing and feeling. And many times we've trusted that and come away with just awesome experiences. So yes, by all means, we'll definitely work with you.
Well, I'd love to. And while I'm on your show tonight, and I share this a lot every opportunity you get, I want to commend all groups like your group and all the investigative groups out there that are in this paranormal industry for doing what you're doing. You are really truly opening doors and having people to say, you know, let's look at life, this thing again. I think there's more than just life here. And, you know, I commend you guys for doing what you do, because it really assists me. It really is a benefit. It really benefits those like myself who, like you said, the only tools we have is what's within us. And I feel that if by all of us working together, I feel like the doors of the paranormal are going to continue to open up. We're going to continue to learn more. And that's what this is all about. So thank you out there. If you're an investigator, thank you so much. From Rick Hayes to you, I thank you so much for what you're doing.
Well, thank you too, and we appreciate you too. I mean, it's, you know, running into capable people who really know how to, you know, reach out and see and touch and feel the feelings these people had, and when they come back and talk to us, I mean, that's the most valuable thing we have. And boy, I'm going to be happy to have you come with us. So, you know, it's funny. I look at this whole thing of why we do it, you know, and it was funny, that actually got asked to our group recently, and I had to really stop and think. And last year, I was with a medium, her name is Christine B., and she operates out of Ohio now. She moved there after some economic changes are hitting all over. So she moved out to Ohio, and I'm not sure she's listening, but she'll probably listen to the show here later in the archive. And we had the experience up in Marshall Monument, which is extremely haunted. We get stuff every time we go out, and it was funny because we asked a question up on the Marshall Monument Hill. We were the only two up there, and our equipment was going crazy. K2 hits the works. Came back home, played the EVPs, and there was this voice literally pleading with us to help them cross them over. And I was so shook up by it. We talked at length, me and Christine and some other friends, and we decided that we'd do our best to see what we could do to help them, the ones that seemed to be confused, the ones that seemed to be, you know, not able to understand what's happened or just are tied to the place and want to go on to heaven. And so we do try to do that. When we run into these EVPs, we do case work over and over again in those places. And so I go out every time now and tell them how they can cross over and try to help them with that. but I wondered what your feelings were on these type of things.
As far as crossing over?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, my upbringing was that my mother's a preacher's daughter, and my grandfather, and I still use the word is, he moved on when I was about 9 months old, but he was a very well-respected evangelist. So I grew up in an upbringing in a church environment of knowing that there was more than just life here. But I, because of these abilities, I also knew that there was something more, you know, that they can tell me all this, but I'm seeing and hearing all this as well. And so, you know, growing up, I did a lot of history, and people ask me, they say, you know, one of the things they ask me is, well, if they're here, does that mean they're not in heaven? Well, I use the scripture, I use the, there's Apostle Paul that wrote, there are three heavens. There's a heaven in the star, there's a heaven on earth, heaven in the stars, heaven beyond the stars. And I like that because what it's saying is that a heaven on earth, this earth was created for us to live forever in. And the value that we have life here, we should consider it as a part of the heaven. A heaven in the stars is basically what they're sharing is. I feel it's telling us that our loved ones that we feel is gone is still around us. And heaven beyond the stars is simply where I feel our Creator is and the angels. Now, the question is, if they go into the third heaven, will they able to be around us? Well, you know, again, it's documented that the angels come down on earth and leave and come back. And I feel like the gate's not closed. It's not locked. We're able to do the same thing. So, you know, as far as crossing over, going into the light, I have my own thoughts on that. I feel that those that are around us, there are some of those that has made the choice. We are given many gifts here. One of the gifts we're given in life is the gift of choice. We're not robots here. We can make our own choices in life. I also feel like we have that same gift when we move on. We have the gift of choice. We can be around our loved ones and help them through their life here and guide them along their life and their path, or we can simply go into the third heaven, and that is going toward the light per se. But again, if you go toward the light, that's maybe where I'm a little bit different. Does that mean they're not able to come be around us? I feel that we still do, because I feel it's all one heaven.
I would agree with that. I've often felt like, you know, like, for example, in the case of my grandfather, I mean, you bringing up my grandfather, I'm very aware that he doesn't stay around. You know, he actually came when I called. It was funny. We'd been through a really tough time, and I looked at his picture, and there's a picture of him as a boy in my dad's room. And I walked up to it, and I said, "Grandpa," I said, you know, and this was just a private conversation, him and me. And I said, "Grandpa, I really think we need you to kind of, you know, come back and just keep an eye on things, and then let us know when he's getting in trouble. If you could do that, we'd be so appreciative." And I never told anybody. And 2 days later, my mother and I were talking, and she looks at me and she says, I hate to break this to you. And she says, "I'm seeing another spirit." And I said, "What are you seeing, Mom?" And she says, "I think it's your grandfather." And I started to laugh, but I said, "Well, let me tell you what I did." So, I mean, I really think he came back in visitation and that he's continuing to do that. We see them.
Absolutely.
We see them quite a bit when things are starting to get a little funny, or sometimes even if he's not getting you know, a physical thing going on, sometimes he gets a little depressed, and then they'll suddenly be around, and that seems to be, you know, and it's almost like they're the early warning system for us. So we're so appreciative of that, you know.
Absolutely, and I need to ask you this question: was he around during the depression years, during the late 20s?
Oh God, yes.
Okay.
He was. Yes.
Okay. Would there also be a picture of him, maybe when he was young, and I don't know if it's suspenders or these little straps going across? I'm almost feeling like there's a picture of him, like with something would hold his pants up. Okay.
There's a picture of them on the family ranch. This was in in Napa. Our family actually owned most of Napa at one time, and it was mostly a cattle ranch. And because of eminent domain and different things, the family basically the ranch by the time I came into the picture is, you know, was basically much smaller than it had been. But I've seen pictures of them out working, and yes, exactly what you said. They were working, and he was in suspenders.
Okay, I think the reason he's bringing up this picture is, again, he's wanting to bring a validation to you, but it's also a picture it's almost like he wants you to concentrate on again or focus on again. I think there's a story behind it that maybe you can share with that your dad might know, or maybe I'll bring a smile to your dad. Because there's, you know, because this is a picture he keeps showing me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I oddly enough, I was thinking about that picture not long ago because I remembered it, and I was trying to figure out where Mom was keeping the darn picture. So I'm in on that. That's good. That's real good. I don't know how you're doing a good job. You know that.
Well, I'll share with you. I'll share with everyone else. You know, I appreciate. I thank you for allowing me to be a part, but thank him because he's the one that's sharing the messages.
Yeah, and I'm just blown away by the stuff that's happened. I mean, we've had so many members of the family come in, but he's been a pretty consistent visitor since this all started. You know, when I asked him to come back, and it was really heartfelt. I mean, we were just at our wit's end with the seizures and stuff, and they finally found the right answer. And, you know, who better than a neurosurgeon for a grandfather in spirit to come back and help with something like this, you know?
So, yeah, and you know him, and he's very organized. He's very, you know, he wants to take this step, and he's a very organized person. So he's the best one to be around right now.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, to me, it's become the norm. I guess just the same way for you, the norm is every day you are excited because you don't know quite what's going to happen, but you know it's going to be something cool.
Yeah.
So,
And actually, John, I got a question for you. You know, you have these abilities, and you're also an investigator. Have you ever seen where it is, I know if you work them right, they actually bring you more benefits, more validation. But have you ever had it where it seemed to conflict with one another?
Well, what do you mean conflict?
Where you're getting one feeling, but maybe your electronics that you have there is getting something else?
Yeah, I'm often, sometimes I'm like drawn to a particular spot. I tend to find myself in the right spot at the right time for activity. And a lot of my friends know, you know, especially in this business, you know, I'm Mr. EVP. I mean, I get EVPs like, no tomorrow. They love talking to me.
And that has a lot to do with your abilities. It really does.
Yeah, they just seem to pop in, and I get conflicted sometimes because I'm not sure quite, you know, where to go with some of the equipment, and I'm trying to lead the team at the same time and do all the things I got to do, but. The EVPs sometimes come back different than I think they would be, or I'll think that I didn't get evidence in one place, and it turned out I got it there, and I was wrong. But you know, that's just hand in hand with doing this business. You just don't know quite what's going to go down. But yeah, I get those conflicting feelings. So sometimes I'm just, especially if I'm tired and I'm trying to do investigations. I'm really get off, you know. I mean, you really have to be rested up and at full power when you go in, because you're being taxed. I mean, psychically as well as, you know, organizationally and physically, you come out pretty worked out, you know. And I know what you know I'm talking about. It's just
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I sleep really good after a good investigation, and it's just it's a real workout. There's no other way to put it, especially when you're dealing with, if you go into a place where there's known hostilities or, you know, there's been tragedy and you walk in, it's extremely tiring. There's no other word for it. And you just need a little extra time after you go through it. And I'm sure that happens for you.
Absolutely. And you know, and part of the reason why I ask you that question is for the listeners tonight, especially if you're in the investigative field, is when you're going to these locations, it's very, very important to go in with the right attitude, to be very positive, and go in with the thought in your mind that you are going to connect, you are going to receive messages, and be positive, because positive energy will attract positive energy. And if you go in with the positive energy, they feel this, they know this, and they're going to be sharing this with you more. And like, and the reason I ask about your abilities is because it appears that those who have connected with their abilities, when they go in these places, will actually, again, like you said, will bring additional EVPs or additional validations. I'll give you an example. I was working just a couple weeks ago up around Pittsburgh with a couple in this location that is. It's got a lot of history since 1925. It's a 70,000 square foot place, and they are getting so many EVPs in there. We was down in the basement area, and we was down at one end of the hallway, and one of the persons that was with us, she had shared with me that she's sensitive, and she, yeah, you know, she feels these things. And we're down at one end of the hallway. It's complete darkness, of course. And I looked down at the end of the hallway, and I said, the door on the left is there's someone looking out the door to the left. And another individual that was with us said, there's no way that door's kept locked. There's no one is allowed in that room because it's like a boiler room. And I said, well, let's go down there. Well, when we got down at the end of the hallway, the door was open. And so we walked in, and as soon as we walked in, you know, I started sharing the messages I was sharing from this male. And this female that was with us, who feels is a sensitive, she was standing right there, and of course they had the recorder on. And she said, it sure does look like a lot of work here. And on the recorder, just as soon as she said that, the male said, it sure is. And we were standing there, and it was so clear. And one of the individuals asked me, they said, why did he answer her so clearly? I said, because she went in there with the attitude, the positive attitude, I want to talk to you. I want to learn from you. He felt that. And that's why he connected with her so well. So it's wow. It's so important when you have these abilities, and it's not. And as I shared with everyone at the very beginning, you have these abilities to go in there with the attitude that I'm going to go in there to learn, I'm going to go in there to receive messages, and I'm going to go in there with a positive energy. Because if you go in there to provoke, if you go in there with negative energy, you're going to get what you're asking for. If you go in with the positive energy, you're going to receive so many more validations.
And you're absolutely right, and that's exactly how we operate. We do not provoke. And I'm going to take just real quickly, we're coming up on towards the end of the show, so I wanted to make sure we did highlight your website and things coming up for you, Rick. And we continue the broadcast just a little bit after. If you want to stay on just a little more and talk, I'd sure love that.
Sure.
We could have the archive listeners. So go ahead and it's your website and whatever you got coming up.
Well, the best way to find out what we got going, because we got a lot going on, is just go to lifesgift.com. That's LIFESGIFT, all one word, lifesgift.com. If you go to the website there, you'll see all the things we got going on, where I'm going to be speaking. We've got another film coming out on sci-fi in the early part of 2010 called Soul Catcher, Trail of Tears, and looking forward to that. But just, you know, and everyone out there listening, embrace every moment that you receive and always keep the faith.
Well, we're 90 seconds away from the end of the stream for everybody, and I'll just call out the folks here in the chat room. Kathy, love you to death, honey. I know you're out there. It's probably cold in the East Coast, along with where Rick is at right now out in Kentucky. So, you know, stay warm, Kathy, because we know you need that. Karen over in Phoenix, I love you, sweetheart, and hope you come up again and hunt with us. So, you know, again, because we had a great time when you were here. And Mom says the home cooking is still waiting. Mystic Taint, great to see you. Rusu, R-R-U-S-O-O-U-812, greetings to you. USA is not gay. Good to see you, and hope that question got answered. So thank you, guys. And we're going to just I'm looking at we're 30 seconds away from end of stream. So that said, you know, make sure to tune in later because I'm going to ask just a few more questions for a few more minutes with Rick if he's got a little more time. And you can hear that on the archive show. So with that, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. And we'll just play our little bumper music or something here, something good, if I can find it real quick. And I probably won't, so hell, here we go.
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you live on blogtalkradio.com.
Okay, and with that, we are off stream, and it's just you and me, Rick.
Okay.
Yeah, a very good show, and I really appreciate you coming on with us. Man, I mean, it sounds like you and me have had some similar experiences, my friend.
And again, I want to thank you for the opportunity and to be a part of the show, and I just really enjoyed it, and I learned. I mean, that's what's great about these things is that. You know, not just that I'm a guest on your show tonight, but I learned so much just from being a part of this show. So I want to thank you for that as well.
Well, thank you. And oddly enough, I don't know. I read on occasion myself, so I'm going to return the favor to you. I keep getting the word silly for you. I don't know what silly means, but there's something silly going on with you right now, and so I got the word silly spoken to me, and that's just what I had to say. I don't know what that's about, but
is that as silly as the state, like in Philadelphia?
As silly as like in somebody's being absolutely silly, as you know, they're being a little bit goofy with you. There's silliness going on in your life, and you're kind of putting up with some silliness. So I don't know what that was about, but. Somebody's reminding me to tell you about the silliness, and I hope that makes sense to you, because I sure as hell doesn't to me.
Well, that is so strange, because the first part of each year, the first Saturday of December of each year, me and my brother and sisters get together, which happens to be tomorrow. We're going to be in another town, and we all just spend the day together. And when we all get together, it is absolutely silly. You know, I mean, we just have a great time. We just, you know, we just tease each other and just have a great time. And so I'm sure that's what someone is telling you to tell me tomorrow's going to be a silly day and look forward to it. So
good. You know, that's the funny thing I've learned over the years is don't edit, just jump and trust what you're getting. And I've had to really work at it, and so I looked at that and I thought I better not edit. I'll just say it. So,
oh well, you
have,
know what?
Have
I can
a silly time.
And I can truly understand that. When I first came out in the public with this, there were so many times I would receive a message and I would say, I'm not going to say that. They already think I'm weird enough. You want me to say something like that? And what I've learned is that I learned very quickly. That what may be sound crazy to me is absolutely a validation to that one that I'm sharing the message with, and so I'm like you. It's just like, well, I'm going to say this, so I'm just going to see what happens, you know. But I'm going to say it, and just like in this tonight, just like what you just shared with me is silly. You know, like you said, it sounded kind of silly for saying the word silly, but it made a complete validation to me. And that's just telling me that I've got a loved one that's telling you to let me know I'm going to have a great and fun day tomorrow. So that's great. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's funny because I feel like maybe just see your thoughts on this. Do you feel that, for example, when holiday time comes, and for all of us, for all families, we have kind of a tradition in our own home of putting a plate out for those who have passed on, kind of as a, and I've heard other people do the same thing, that they put a plate out at the table for Christmas and Thanksgiving and, you know, New Year's dinners to kind of include those who have passed on. And I just get the feeling this time of year it's a good time to share that tradition with others out there and say, hey, do that. You know, we almost forgot, and I remembered, and I went and grabbed the plate and said, oh yeah, you got to put it out for those who've gone on with us. But what are your feelings about that? You know, is there like an extra dose of those type of spirits that come in during the holiday season to remind us? You know,
well, and I think it's a couple things. I think that. They still want you to know that, you know, that there may have been a tradition in your family that's been carried on for many, many years, that they want you to know that, you know, they're still here to be a part of that. And on the flip side of that, I've had those who I've consulted with during this holiday season, and they may have a loved one that recently moved on, or maybe just a few years ago, and they're really having a tough time right through this season because that loved one is not physically here. And so they will almost like bring them extra validations to let them know that they're here to help them get through this holiday and to let them know that they're still here. So, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of reasons why our loved ones would be doing things right now and during the holidays, and that's two of the reasons right there. That plate thing, I like that. I've heard that before, and that's just a great, I don't want to even call it tradition. It's a great way to respect and honor them and to say, hey, I know you're still here with us.
Yeah, it's funny. I picked that up. Oddly enough, I was at a facility of ours called Aerojet Electric Systems down in Southern California, and there was a Hawaiian man there. I would fly down there from Sacramento and work with them, and so I'd go down to our Southern California office and work for a couple of days and come back. And this guy, really interesting, and he found out I was spiritual, and we talked. This is back about 1994, and he told me about how the Hawaiians live, and that they make their dead part of everyday life every day. And this was before I really got paranormal, but it made sense to me. And that's when I kind of learned about how they deal with their meal times and stuff like that. And so I kind of, you know, brought it up with my mother, and she had already done that in the past, but it had fallen away. And then, you know, we got back into it a bit. So it's just, I just think it's really neat. I mean, a lot of cultures out there do that. They honor the dead by making them part of the everyday life. And I just think that's a really valuable thing, you know. And now that it's so much more apparent in my own life, you know, I really feel the need to you know, really embrace that. And not only that, I mean, with my father, I mean, you might appreciate this. I mean, I make a big point, because I don't know when I go out the door if I'll see him again.
Right.
I tell him and my mother every day, I love you guys. And, you know, I just make a big deal out of that. And my father rolls his eyes, you know, oh, God. And then I'll say, do you love me, Dad? And he'll go, yes.
and you heard me at the end of the live broadcast that, I shared embrace your moments. And I really, truly feel that. I mean, you really embrace every moment you're given. And just as you said, you don't know when you're father may be completing his plan and will be leaving his physical body, and of course he'll always be around you, but you never know that. And so take the moments that you get and really embrace them. And you know, on another point I want to share on this is, you said about honoring, a lot of people ask me, well, what about cemeteries? Is it, you know, are they in the cemeteries, and is it okay to go to the cemeteries? Well, you know, again, you're going to a cemetery to honor that person, to respect that person, and even reflect on that person, that loved one that is no longer with you in the physical body. Sure, it's absolutely so. But I always also say, share this, that when you leave, they're going to leave with you. Why would they stick around in 6 foot of dirt? You know, that's their physical body. So, you know, they're there with you because they know that you're there to reflect on them and to honor them. But when you walk away and you leave, they're going to leave with you. They're always around you. They're not going to stick around in the cemetery. So
that's a funny thing, because I was just wondering about that, because I do hunt cemeteries here. And I've got a relationship with one spirit over in the Shingle Springs Cemetery called William Madison Palmer. And he's a very well-known, he was a very well-known rancher around here. And he's my friend. And he was one of my first great EVPs, and he kind of took a shine to me. And so when I go over there, I kind of made that my cemetery, and I kind of watch over it, and I call the police if there's any vandalism, and I take care of things. One of the traditions, though, I have is every Thanksgiving and Christmas, I take over a snifter of really fine whiskey, Southern Comfort.
Yeah.
And I put it out there, and you gotta—I mean, you're gonna love this. I put this out there last December, and I forgot Thanksgiving, so I got to go over there and take care of these guys this weekend. But I took it over there, and I gave them all little gifts. I put ornaments on all the gravestones and even the unknowns I where I could find them. And
wow.
I put the whiskey over on his crypt, and it just in a little paper cup. And the EVPs I got this one. You're going to love it. This one, and these are old miners, so they're kind of gruff.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's voice comes on. He goes, "That man is a saint." I just loved it.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my God, that's the best EVP I ever got.
That man is that is great.
I want to have you back on so I could play some of this stuff for you.
I'd love to hear them. I would to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, what's speaking of the EVPs and doing the research that you've done and on the cases you've been on, what sorts of great memories do you have on different investigations you've done? That's a good one to go with.
Well, like I said, I have been to about just about, and that's what's been another great part of this life is just I've been invited and been a part of it about every place that has been considered haunted, you know, from forts to Navy ships to sanatoriums to hospitals. You know, and it just seems like each one I go to, there's always something that I leave there that is very memorable. And, you know, even the individual homes, you know, that I've been a part of. But, you know, out in your area, I mentioned Alcatraz, and then I can't recall at this time, but there was another location out there that is actually it has a lot of history. I want to even go back in the in the early 1900s, and I can't think of the name of the building right now. And you said Fresno, and it may be in Fresno, but I recall that we was at a fort in near Savannah, Georgia, and we went there, and of course it was dark, and it's really funny because when I go to these places, I've got someone, he's a big guy, kind of followed me around so I won't trip and fall because I just literally walk in the dark and not even look, you know. And because I'm just being told where to go. And I felt to go in this one part of the fort. And as I'm walking toward this part of the fort, I kept hearing that the ones that was jailed there was not the one that was supposed to be in the jail, in the prison. And so we got near this location, and there was these cells. And again, I didn't know anything about this history of this fort. And I even mentioned a name of a military officer. And as we're walking away from the jail cell, one of the Life's Gift team members, there was a plaque on the wall, and happened to capture it on the flashlight. And it shared with us that the prisons were the cells were actually created with the fort to capture the Northern during the Civil War. And actually, the Northern soldiers had taken over the fort and actually had imprisoned the Southern soldiers in their own cells.
Oh my God!
So yeah, and they read on down the plaque, and at the bottom of the plaque it had this, I believe it was a captain maybe, but it was some officer, and there was his name right there, and you know that just. Because when I was getting that, John, I it's like they're telling me that the ones that was jailed in these prisons, in these cells, were not the ones that was originally for, and I couldn't understand that. And so that was very interesting. And like I said, I've been to, the Waverly just this last fall was there. I was up on the fifth floor, and I was working actually with another person with CBS Radio Network. And we was on one end of the fifth floor, and someone walked up to us that was investigating the other end of the fifth floor, and they came up to us and they said, "Rick, we got this box over there, and it's some kind of electronic box, and it's calling your name." And I said, "Okay." And they said, "Would you mind coming over here and helping us?" And I said, "Absolutely not." And they said, "Yeah, because it's saying, talk to Rick. And so as I went to the other side of the fifth floor, and as I started approaching this group with that box, all of a sudden the male voice on that box said, "Here is Rick." And so I start, you know, so I start communicating, you know, I start connecting with, and I actually walked away from this group, and I was standing on, and it's on the, actually on the roof line. I'm standing there, and I look over to the right, and there's just this group of spirits or these energies coming toward me, and they're like walking toward me, and all this, and in this group was this female energy, and she almost went ahead of the rest of them. And I looked at the group that was with this electronic box, and I said, I've got a female coming to me now that's going to talk to me. Well, just as soon as I said that, the voice on the box changed to a female voice. And wow. So I'm standing there talking to her and sharing messages, and they had these night vision goggles or something. So I don't know what they are. But one of the guys in the investigative groups was standing there, and he was looking at me as I was sharing the messages. Suddenly, he dropped this piece of equipment that he was looking through, and he picked them up. He said, "Oh my God!" And he dropped them. He picked them up and he handed them to someone else. And they said, you know, they literally got shook and shaken, and they passed it around to about two or three others. And I wasn't really paying attention to what they were doing. And so when I got finished, this person had dropped them, not these. These electronic goggles, had said, Rick, every one of us looked in the goggles at this time, and you had a female face on your body. And I said, Whoa. No, I didn't. I said, no, I didn't. And they said, yes, you did. All of us, each one of us saw this through these goggles, and you had a female face in your body. And I said, no, nobody gets in this body. Okay. But what I said, what you saw was, and I knew this, I said the female that I was sharing the message with was actually standing in front of me, and you were only capturing her, the energy of her face, of her head, and the rest you was capturing my physical body. I said she wasn't in me, she was in front of me, but they captured that. So that was pretty unique as well. But there's been. John, just about every one place I go to, it's always just been phenomenal, and it's been an experience that is always taken with me. There's something every place I go to that is taken with me.
I have the same experiences. I mean, I come away from each investigation even the ones that, quote, don't go so good, you know, there's real life stuff gets in the way, but you come away, and there's always something that goes on. And you come back just marveling at the fact that this stuff actually happens to you. I mean, I just did a case at someone's home here about a week ago, and we had one of our investigators got her hair tugged really hard, and it turned out it was a bit of a tussle between this somewhat hostile male, and there was a female who's very protective, and there's a little conflict going on. We're trying to still get to the bottom of this particular case, but I came away from that, you know, and we were up almost all night, and got up in the morning, and I was pretty fresh, and I just was looking, going, I get the coffee, and I'm looking around, and I go, how did I end up doing this? I mean, I look at it and I just go, it's amazing, you know. And every case, I'm still having that same kind of wonder, you know, when you come away, even if it's been a kind of a rough night. You know, the next day, you're just wow. So
yeah.
I hear that in you. I mean, it's still for me as fresh as it was, you know, from the first. You know,
I'm asked the question too, you know, especially recently. Has Michael Jackson ever came to you, you know, or any of these celebrities ever came to you? It's like, why? They don't know me, you know? And unless I'm at their home or maybe with their family, you know, I know that especially when Michael Jackson came out, there were several in this industry that was, you know, connecting. And my question was, you know, and I don't know the answer, but my question is, did Michael Jackson know them before he moved on, you know, so that he would connect with them? You know, Michael Jackson and all these people say, have you ever connected with Elvis Presley? Well, if I go to Graceland and if I'm actually walking his home, I'm sure he'll approach me and wants to begin sharing with me about his home. But these people don't know me from Adam. I've never met them before personally, so why would they come to me now? They're going to be around their family. That's who they're going to be around.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, it's funny because I get that question a lot with us. It's like, why do you go to all these places? You could just get ghosts locally. Well, no, but you got to go where they lived. You got to go to where their passions and their loves and their tragedies were to connect with them. And then it makes perfect sense, you know. And my father has the worst time with it because he's just so, you know, he's so not wanting to believe in any of this. But, you know, I think it's finally gravitating to him why I do what I do. But it's just, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's you've got to go to where the action is and where they were. And they will make their presence known to you. And it's just their history is there. And it makes absolute sense that they would stay there and, you know, be part of that. You know, one question I'd have for you, you know,
okay.
And I'll throw this back at you, is what, how long would they stay around a place? You know, I mean, I know there's ghosts in England, for example, that are still walking around after 600-700 years. So what do you think on that topic? I mean,
I think as long as long as someone is wanting to learn about the place, wanting to know about the place, they're going to be around to help. And again, you know, if, you know, my thoughts is this, is if you've lived in your home for 20 years or 30 years and you complete your plan and move on and someone else moves into your home and after you have moved on, and why would you not be hanging around to help them to get the most out of your home that you had, you know, the memories that you had, the experiences that you had. So I feel like they're going to hang around there, you know, just as long as someone wants to know about the location. And I've had those times where, you know, there may be something going on. For example, a home, they're getting ready to change the home. The home that was built, I wrote a book called You're Not Crazy, You Have a Ghost, and it's about a home that was built in 1906. And the family was having all kinds of problems, you know, having all kinds of occurrences in there. And the families that lived before them, that lived there, had the same occurrences. Well, the most of the occurrences were going on with this family when the family was talking about doing some major renovations where they was making where they was going to turn the home into a business. And there were so many occurrences going on. But once another family came in and said, we're going to bring it back to its original splendor, it's almost like they started receiving, it didn't stop, but they started receiving validations that this was good. And, you know, and I went there and I shared with him as the original owner that built the home. He built the home for the family and he didn't want it to be a business. And that's why he was here. And so, you know, that I feel as long as we want to know about a place and as long as the place is there, they're going to be around.
Do you think that this is just kind of a really stretch here, but there's caves in different places in France where there are the Neanderthal people lived and Cro-Magnon man, and so there's the cave art and cave paintings and things like that. Do you believe that it would be, after all these, you know, 20,000 years, you know, it would be possible to have a spirit from back then be able to communicate with us in the modern day, you know, based on
theory? Yes, I do, and it's simply because of this phrase I share. What we must understand is that our life here, our time here isn't like time in the life after. In other words, you know, we're in a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week time. They're in an everlasting lifetime. So what may, and I always use the scripture or the verse, 1,000 years to us is like a day to them. And what that's saying is what may be 1,000 years to us or 20,000 years to us may just be a few days to them. So, you know, as long as they know that we're trying to learn about the place, we're trying to find more about the place, what happened at this place, I think they can still be around no matter how long it's been.
Wow. You know, that's something I've been wanting to try. I mean, we've got places here where we know Indians were walking around, 5,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago. So we know that there's sites around here in the western part of this country where that's happened. And my grandfather told me about one of these, my grandfather who's still alive on my mom's side. And I'm going to actually try to find that place. And there's engravings in the rock there that are dated even further back than some theory, you know, about the migration of the Indians would allow for. So I want to go back there and find it and bring my equipment with me and just see what we get. I've just had an interest in these, in trying to push the science a little bit and say, how far back can we take EVP, you know, with different sites and see what we get. So, you know.
Well, I wrote another book, and I talk about this, that when you go to a location, you know, just because there's a home in that location doesn't necessarily mean that the spiritual energies that you're getting is connected to that home. You know, you got to do a lot of research, and you know this. Find what, you know, that home that is on that land now, before that may have been a plantation, it may have been a teepee, it may have been, you know, it may have been just a, you know, like you said, a cave for Neanderthals, the cavemen. So, you know, you just got to, when you go to these places, don't just automatically assume that the house is built there, because, you know, I have a lot of those that I've had a lot of those several consultations. Well, one I think of that the home was built in the late 1980s. They were having all kinds of experiences going on in their home. And as soon as I walked into their home, John, I was sitting at their kitchen table. I looked over in their dining room, and there was an American Indian, a male and a female, standing there. And I asked her, I said, are you connected in any way to the American Indians? And she said, no. Well, to make a long story short, come to find out, after we went down the basement, and she said there was a lot about their